Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now what a treat. We get to meet Reverend Mpaw Tutu, the daughter of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1984 for his contribution to post-apartheid racial reconciliation in South Africa. Now father and daughter are joining forces to launch the Tutu Global Forgiveness Challenge, a 30-day project designed to help us all learn how to forgive. The program uses concrete steps and exercises following what the Tutus call the fourfold path to forgiveness, which is outlined in the book that they have co-authored, The Book of Forgiving, the fourfold path for healing ourselves and our world. Reverend Tutu, such an honor. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be with you.
And I want to start by asking you a question that might seem a little obvious, but what exactly do you mean by forgiveness? Are there different kinds, and why is there a chapter in your book on what forgiveness is not?
In answer to the first part of the question, what is forgiveness? Forgiveness is when you relinquish the right to retaliate against the person who has harmed you, and that you free yourself from being bound to them. You free yourself from being bound to them, and you may not, that you don't wish them ill, and you may even wish good for them.
And why do you have
And it's a working definition.
And there is a chapter in your book on what forgiveness is not. So what do you want us to know that it is not?
Well, I think the importance of saying what forgiveness is not is that it's often very hard to for people to forgive, because they think that somehow either forgiveness is weak, which it is not. It takes a great deal of strength and courage to forgive. They think that forgiveness means to forget, which it does not. It means actually to be able to remember quite clearly what injury has been committed and to let it go. And people sometimes think that forgiveness circumvents or halts the process of justice. It does not.
Does not circumvent justice.
It does not circumvent justice. And so, for instance, the burglar who broke into your house and gets caught by the police will still have to go through the criminal justice process, even if you forgive him for that injury that has been committed to you.
Listeners,
against you.
Listeners want to call in and share your best forgiveness stories, either you as forgiver or forgivee, 212-433-WNYC, or your questions on the Book of Forgiving, the Fourfold Path for Healing Ourselves and Our World, that Archbishop Desmond Tutu and his daughter, our guest, Reverend Mpaw Tutu, have written together, or their 30-day Tutu Global Forgiveness Challenge, 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. Reverend Tutu, you gave an example a minute ago of forgiving the burglar who breaks into your house. Burglary is a nonviolent crime. The burglar might break into your house and steal your iPod or something, but you and your father, and you write about some of these in the book, have been involved with really weighty traumas in South Africa. Does forgiveness work the same way for a murder or a rape or genocide as it does for, say, a cheating spouse or a burglar?
The process is the same. The quantum may be different, but the process is the same. It's something akin to the process of grieving. You may grieve the loss of your favorite scarf. You may grieve the loss of an animal or a pet. You may grieve the loss of a spouse. You may grieve the loss of a child. Each of those has a different quantum, but the process of grieving is always the same. And we say the process of forgiveness is ultimately always the same. It is a fourfold process, and you may go through each of the four steps of the process at different speeds. You might be able to rush through the process in the blink of an eye and not even notice that you're actually engaging the process. Or you might actually take a long time over one or other steps of the forgiveness process.
Let's take a phone call. Scott in Queens. You're on WNYC with Reverend Empaw Tutu. Hello, Scott.
Yes, hi, and certainly appreciate your work and that of your father. Although I've been studying forgiveness off and on for 30 years. I will share briefly my experience. My wife left me, ran off with someone, and left me and my three daughters, and was involved in an affair, and then ended up marrying him. My kids never met him until after they were married. So that was pretty painful, but my studies have been on biblical forgiveness and what Jesus meant. And I just feel like a lot of times, and I don't know if you consider this or not, but I feel like we re-victimize victims, you know, by telling them to do something that really not even God will do. And I think that we use a definition of forgiveness, as you just explained, that's a good definition, but it was not a definition of forgiveness as used in Jesus' time.
So are you saying, Scott, that it re-victimizes you to be asked to forgive your wife who ran off?
Right. Well, yes. For some people, it's re-victimization because we can't do something that God won't do. And the word forgive, actually, I just would challenge anyone, and of course, this is, I'm talking about a biblical, not our definition. Our definition works for however we want to define it. But if you want to go by Jesus' teachings, he was a Jew. Most Christians, I don't know if your guest knows, Ms. Tutu knows what teshuvah is, but most Christians don't even know that term. They don't know that Jesus taught teshuvah. We have a different definition. We define it as not holding anger, not being bitter. So the word forgive, if you just look up the concordance, right, it means to remove.
Well, as a reverend, do you want to respond to that theological point, Reverend Tutu? And what about this idea of re-victimizing the victim to ask them to forgive in some instances?
Two things. One is that forgiveness is an invitation. And the invitation is the invitation to forgive is an invitation that is offered to free yourself from what has burdened you.
So forgiveness is for us, or your phone was breaking up, I guess. But you're saying there that forgiveness is really for the victim's sake?
Yes, that forgiveness is not actually a gift that you give to the perpetrator. It's a gift that you give to yourself. You will find that when you offer forgiveness, that is something that is a gift to you. You relinquish the burden of hurt that has been placed upon you.
But is that all you're getting at with the book and the movement with your father? Is it self-help in that respect of, okay, if you can forgive somebody who's wronged you, you're going to feel better? Or is there also a larger moral crusade that you're on here having to do with actually forgiving the other person, actually forgiving somebody who's a perpetrator who did you harm in a relationship with that person of sorts?
There's a couple of things that we're getting at with the book. We're getting at forgiveness writ small, forgiveness in the small interpersonal interactions that make life in community, life in a family, life as a couple possible. It's impossible to have a healthy family if there is no forgiveness. We're constantly able to find ways of hurting each other deliberately or unintentionally. But also forgiveness writ large. When we look at the world stage, we can see where people have chosen the path of forgiveness and where people have instead chosen the path of revenge or retribution. And the examples of revenge and retribution are not examples of happy places or places that one would want to be living. Syria, Egypt at the moment come immediately to mind. Bosnia, Northern Ireland during the Troubles come to mind as well, where generation after generation, the cycle of revenge is repeated on and on ad infinitum. We in South Africa chose a different path. Rwanda, after the genocide, has also chosen a different path, and that's to the benefit of our societies.
Miriam in Huntington Station, you're on WNYC. Hello, Miriam.
Yes, hi. I just have, I don't know if it's a question or a comment. I had a really bad experience with my younger sister. We were trying to buy a house in another country, and one of the requirements was that she, you know, we had someone there to make the payments personally. She took the payments for a whole year, and when I confronted her, she denied it for 2 years. When I confronted her the last time, she told me that, yes, indeed, she took the money and she used it and she enjoyed it. And people tell me to forgive her. I feel like if I forgive her, she's getting away with a crime. I don't feel bound to her. In the beginning, yes, I wanted to kill her with my own hands. I was, you know, like making plans to go down there and burn her house because I find out that my mother knew about it and she covered for her. My older sister knew about it. And
so she refuses to apologize. It's not that she did this only. She's not remorseful, if I'm understanding your story correct.
When my mother passed away, somebody that knew about the issue asked her, told her that it was the best opportunity for her to ask for forgiveness. And she said, I don't have to ask for forgiveness because I didn't do anything wrong.
So that's frustrating and aggravating. And, you know, with respect to Miriam's story and the other callers who I'm seeing waiting, who are not going to have time to get to, Reverend Tutu, our board is filled with people who want to tell why they cannot forgive somebody who did them wrong. I don't have any forgiveness stories on the board.
Well, I understand that, and that's why we offer the forgiveness challenge and why we have written the book of forgiving. That we don't say that one is required to forgive, but we do offer forgiveness as a way out of the pain, anger, anguish, and resentment that holds us hostage.
What about the perpetrator? Is there anything that the forgiver does to ask something of the perpetrator, or not at all, because then you're still attached?
The first part of the forgiveness process is to tell the story. And if you can tell the story of what happened to the perpetrator, it's so much the better. The second step in the process is to name the hurt. And if you can tell the perpetrator how it is that they have injured you, that they have destroyed your dignity, they've destroyed your livelihood, they've assaulted your humanity. If you can do those things, if you can tell the perpetrator those things, then you stand a much better chance of being able to heal.
Before we run out of time, I would love you as an example of this, and I appreciate you going through the steps there in your fourfold path to forgiveness. But could you tell a little bit of your own very personal story of forgiveness from when you discovered your children's nanny, who was also your dear friend, murdered in your daughter's bedroom? You were able to forgive the murder?
Yes. The grace of being a member of a worshiping community is that I have been a part of a community where I have been able to talk about the anguish of Angela's death. And I have been able to say the ways that it has affected us as a family. And then also to be comforted by that community, to be offered solace by that community, but also to recognize that whomever the person is who did kill Angela, it is a person, and that we have in common a human story, and that I would hope that I would never find myself in a circumstance where I would even consider harming another person in that way. But I don't know the whole story.
Well, let me get one more call. Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
And I think your story was whole there as you told it. And I want to get one more caller in, because now Brendan from Jersey City wants to tell us about being forgiven after he did something harmful. Do I have that right, Brendan?
Yes, you do.
Tell us your story.
I won't get into specific details, but when I was about 18 or 19 years old, I had really harmed another person in my life, a girlfriend at the time, and it was a deep harm, and it was a harm that affected her and affected me for a good 15 to 20 years, and I had sought her to try to make amends for what I have done to her, and to try to find some sort of healing. And what was suggested to me was to reflect on my actions and my harms. And I kind of used the St. Francis prayer as a way to analyze my behavior. And I wrote a letter to this person, saying, sort of owning my behavior and asking her, to try to find some sort of asking her if she could forgive me and try to find some healing in this. And I didn't know what to expect. And, she wrote me a letter, and she said that by me trying to contact her and by me owning my behavior, that she was able to sort of, she found some sort of resolution, and she was able to to move forward, you know. And she also said, you know, don't contact me again,
right.
But thank you for owning your behavior, because by me doing that, she was able to close the door and move forward. And to me, that was just truly, that was truly astounding, that I never thought in a million years that this person would forgive me, and that she was able to do that. Just, that was a huge revelation. And I think in turn that I've been able to sort of utilize her experience to forgive other people that have harmed me, you know, in my life. And it was really, it was wonderful.
That's a great story, Brendan. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that story.
Maybe next you need 30 days of owning up to your responsibilities. But
yeah, well, the challenge does take both sides, that we all are in need of forgiveness, and we all at some point will need to forgive another.
And listeners, you can sign up for the 2-2 Global Forgiveness Challenge at forgivenesschallenge.com. The challenge begins on Sunday and lasts a month, using the strategies written up in the book by our guest, Reverend Empaw Tutu, and her father, Archbishop Desmond Tutu. It's the Book of Forgiveness. Reverend Tutu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having me on.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will wrap up our program today with a brand new Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry, Brooklyn's own, Vijay Seshadri. Stay with us.